Fannie Lou Hamer was a pivotal figure in the civil rights movement, but sometimes overlooked in popular history. Hamer was a sharecropper who lived in Mississippi and became an activist in her mid-40s for voting rights and black political engagement. She's also the subject of a new book examining her lasting impact. Here's a listen to Hamer speaking on the UW-Madison campus in 1970.
I've been to jail, and I've been beaten in jail till my body was hard as metal. And I've been charged with disorderly conduct and resisting arrest. And there's a lot of other young people throughout this country that has been beaten down. But I want you to know something in this audience today. A house divided against itself cannot stand. A nation divided against itself is on its way out. We are going to have to stand up and make demands that will make this country worthwhile.
Keisha N. Blaine is an author and associate professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh. Her latest book is Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America. She talked to WPR's J. Carlisle Larson earlier this month.
Let's look at Fannie Lou Hamer's life. What do we know about her life before she got involved in the civil rights movement?
Fannie Lou Hamer was born and grew up in Mississippi. And spent most of her life working as a sharecropper. And so this is very important when you think about her involvement in the civil rights movement, because she came from a very different background than many of the activists that are a lot more well-known. So very different background than someone like Martin Luther King Jr. or John Lewis or even Rosa Parks. And so when we think about her early life before she became involved in the movement, it's important to focus specifically on the challenges she endured living a life of poverty and working as a sharecropper in Mississippi.
And let's really quickly talk about just the legacy of sharecropping, because I think we hear about it as just this is something that people did in the South without really looking at how brutal it could be, how it kept a lot of people in poverty.
Yes, this was a system that developed in the aftermath of slavery. And what's really unfortunate is when it comes to sharecropping, it ultimately allowed for Black people to remain in a system of poverty, certainly. Through sharecropping, one could not actually own property. And it meant that Black people would continue to give of their labor and not actually have much for themselves. So it was a system of exploitation that kept Black people in a never-ending cycle of debt and dependency.
Let's talk about how Fannie Lou Hamer really was turned on to voting, to the civil rights movement, because as you said, she wasn't like John Lewis, who was involved in the early days. It was kind of a chance meeting. Is that correct?
Well, she became involved in the movement much later in life, at the age of 44. And this is significant because, you know, as I mentioned earlier, she spent her life working as a sharecropper and in August of 1962 had an opportunity to attend a mass meeting. And this was a mass meeting that had been organized by activists in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And this was a transformative moment for her. She attended this mass meeting at a local church where she learned not only about the movement, but according to Hamer, that's where she learned about her rights, her voting rights as a citizen of the United States.
And I think that maybe many people listening might take that for granted, that there would be people out there who didn't know that they technically had the right to vote. But can you set the scene a little bit that the South at the time and in many other parts of the country didn't make it easy?
Absolutely. Hamer herself spoke about some of the challenges that she endured leading up to this moment and the context that ultimately made it difficult for her to know a lot of this information. So one of the things that she pointed out was how difficult it was being in a remote community, not necessarily being fully tapped into everything that was taking place, certainly on a national level. So that there's that. But also, she did not have much formal education. One of the things that I talk about in the book is that Hamer ultimately spent much of her early life helping her family. And she obtained about a sixth grade education and did not have full exposure to a lot of the resources and information that many others would have had outside of this particular context of sharecropping. And so it's, in some ways it is surprising, but it also speaks to the lengths that white supremacists would go in this particular period to keep Black people, not only from the vote, but particularly even from access to quality education.
We are talking to Keisha N. Blaine right now. She's an author and associate professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh. Her latest book is Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America. And we're talking about the life and legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer, who was an integral part of the civil rights movement, but we don't always get to hear about her or learn about her. So let's continue looking at her involvement. So she goes to one of these mass meetings that was put on by the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. She was in her mid-40s. She was a sharecropper and lived in Mississippi. As she got involved in this, in the civil rights campaign, particularly as it came to voting, you know, what was her involvement like?
Well, one of the things about Fannie Lou Hamer that I think is important to focus on is what I talk about in the book as her radical honesty. She was very vocal, never minced her words, always spoke boldly and passionately about what she cared about. So it's not ironic that it was actually her powerful speech in 1964 at the Democratic National Convention that ultimately catapulted her career. And so, as I mentioned, she was involved starting in 1962, and 2 years later, she gave this remarkable speech that was televised. So many people saw it. So many people were moved by it. And that was just one glimpse of how she contributed to the movement, always speaking truth to power.
And can we actually talk about that speech for a minute? Because it was at the DNC, it was before the Credentials Committee, and for President Lyndon Johnson at the time, she really, really scared him in some ways. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how the White House responded when she went to speak at the committee?
Yes. Well, it's important first to understand the context in thinking about why she was there in the first place. She played a pivotal role in establishing the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And this was a step that ultimately shed light on the exclusion of Black people in the National Democratic Party. And so she made people uncomfortable from the minute she showed up with other members from the group, because they were there to ultimately demand representation, to demand that Black people have a say, have a voice, and representation. And it's not surprising that when she started speaking, it was clear that she was making a powerful impact. People were moved by her words. She spoke about racial violence. She spoke about state-sanctioned violence. She spoke about voter suppression, many of the challenges that she endured personally, but also the challenges that, other Black people were facing in Mississippi in particular, and across the South. And President Lyndon B. Johnson did not actually want to hear that. So he tried to block her speech. He interrupted, in fact, simply because I think it was clear to him, as it certainly was to so many others, that this was a speech that could change everything. This was a moment where people were not only being moved, but ultimately moved to act, that he knew that it would galvanize people to demand changes and radical changes quickly. And so that terrified him, as it terrified so many others.
We're listening back to a talk between WPR's J. Carlisle Larson and author Keisha Blaine, whose latest book is Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America. We'll hear the rest of that conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're listening back to a talk with WPR's J. Carlisle Larson and historian Keisha Blaine. They talked about Blaine's new book, Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America.
So let's talk to a little bit about what her experience was like. She, I'm hitting this a lot because it's really important that she really stood at the intersection of a lot of things. She could speak to her experience living in poverty. She could speak to her experience as being a woman. She could importantly speak to her experience as being a Black woman. How did that ultimately resonate with people throughout the movement over the years?
I think it left a lasting impact. And one of the things that was so powerful about Hamer is that she just knew how to connect with people. People could relate to her. She just had this warm personality. And so there's so many different narratives that I encountered in the process of writing the book of people talking about how they would visit her home, how she would welcome them in, how she would give them a plate of food, how she would sit with them and talk to them and listen to them. And I think part of that was made possible because of her unique experiences. She could relate to so many different people because of what she endured as a working poor Black woman, as a disabled activist in the South, as someone with limited formal education, right? There were so many aspects of her life that made her quite different than many of the other visible leaders in the movement. And that made a difference. People connected with her and they trusted her.
And if we could talk just for a minute too, she was disabled, and correct me if I'm wrong, she became disabled in part because of violence that she experienced as being part of the civil rights movement. Is that correct?
It is. She spoke about ultimately in her early life, one of the things that she talks about is contracting polio. So that's the first thing that's important to emphasize. But it is, in fact, a brutal beating that she endured in Winona, Mississippi in 1963 that exacerbated a limp and ultimately left her with a number of ailments, physical ailments that she carried for the rest of her life. And that certainly, I think, was important for her because she spoke about her experiences. She spoke about the brutal beating. I mentioned earlier about, you know, how she really honed in on this idea of radical honesty. And that is true when it came to her painful experience of violence on multiple occasions.
One thing that has stood out to me in learning more about Fannie Lou Hamer was, you know, she was an activist. She advocated for voting rights. She advocated for better representation of Black Americans. And she also ran for office. Can you talk a little bit about why she ran for office and the impact it had?
Yes, this is so important because Fannie Lou Hamer, I think, just spent her life trying to devise strategies to improve lives, to improve the lives of everyone around her. Certainly committed to advancing Black political rights, but more broadly, she was committed to advancing the cause of human rights. One of the things that she emphasized was the importance of public service. And she tried. She ran for office 3 times total, was unsuccessful. But one of the things that she admitted was that even when she knew it was unlikely that she could win, it was still powerful. It was still meaningful for her to do it because she wanted to send a message to other people that Black people certainly could serve in office, could hold positions that would give them the ability to introduce policies and lead initiatives that could address social injustice. And so she tried throughout her lifetime to not only talk about the importance of Black political participation, but show through her example by running for office, even though she was unsuccessful.
So Dr. Blaine, one thing that I would like to touch on is just the role of, you know, Black women in particular in social justice movements. We have Fannie Lou Hamer as being this important figure in the civil rights movement. But today we don't always hear about her. We hear a lot about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Can you talk about Black women being centered in a lot of these movements?
Well, I think to this very day, mainstream narratives on the civil rights movement tend to be male-dominated narratives. And this is not to say that historians have not been writing about the significant role that women have played in the movement. We certainly have lots of great books on this topic, but there is still, there is still this resistance, I think, on the mainstream level when we talk about the movement. There's this resistance to center women in particular, and it's somewhat, I think, shocking to me, because if you look at, for example, the Montgomery bus boycott, of 1955 is a moment in history that catapulted the career of Martin Luther King Jr. And we know him because that's the moment where he became involved in the Montgomery Improvement Association. That's when he became well known on a national level. Of course, the actual boycott was started by Black women, a group of women in the Women's Political Council, individuals like Joanne Robinson. So I give that as an example to say that even when we identify Black men who are important leaders, clearly, in the struggle for civil rights, their experiences are not divorced from the significant contributions of Black women in the movement. It's impossible to talk about the civil rights movement without thinking about someone like Fannie Lou Hamer, without thinking about the work of, Ella Baker and, Septima Clark, and just so many others who, even if they were hidden from public view, not by choice, but oftentimes because they were pushed aside or marginalized in the movement, they were vital to shaping the movement as organizers and as leaders behind the scenes.
We are talking to Keisha N. Blaine right now, author and associate professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh. Her latest book is Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America. And we are talking about the history of Fannie Lou Hamer and her role in the civil rights movement. And can you talk a little bit about how Fannie Lou Hamer first showed up for you as part of your education?
I first learned about Fannie Lou Hamer as a college student. And at the time, I had already declared a major in history. I was also pursuing a second major in Africana studies. And so I was primarily taking courses on the experiences of Black people in the US as well as globally. And in 2008, I was taking a course on the American Civil Rights Movement, and that's the first time that I learned about Hamer. I was surprised that it took me that long to find out about her because I just found her story so remarkable, so moving, so inspirational, and I could really relate to her. I could connect to her, you know, as someone coming from a working class background, as someone really trying to find my way at the time as a college student in a predominantly white institution. And finding Hamer, I think, was a moment that changed me, but it was surprising that it took so long to find out about her.
I want to talk about the title of your book for a second, because it's Until I Am Free. But the rest of what Fannie Lou Hamer said is, until I am free, you are not free either. Can you talk about how important that phrase was?
That phrase is so important, and it's exactly why I wanted to name the book Until I Am Free, because I felt like it was important for people to understand how much we are all connected. And this is part of Hamer's vision, her political vision of human rights, a vision that ultimately saw every single human as connected to the next. She wanted people to understand that if you are truly a part of the American polity, you cannot live your life without paying attention to what's taking place around you. You cannot live your life without paying attention to what is happening to other people in the United States. And I think this is a message that is so powerful. Of course, we know that not everyone embraces this message, but I think there is power in the message, in knowing that our futures are connected. We may have different backgrounds, we have different experiences. Clearly, we have so many differences as people, but we are united through humanity. And when we fight for our freedom, we have to also be fighting for the freedom of others. So I think that that phrase encapsulates the power of unity, of solidarity. And certainly this is a message that we all need.
As a historian, Dr. Blaine, we've been talking about Fannie Lou Hamer's legacy in her life, but there's still a lot of history to learn. What do you want people to take away from this book?
I want people to leave this book with a clear sense of the power of the individual, to understand that one can make a difference in society, even with few material resources, even with limited access, even with limited formal education. I think we often focus on the things we don't have, but I hope that people read the book and think about ways they can contribute, think about ways they can make a difference using whatever skills and talents and abilities they have, and that we shift from excuses to solutions. I think that's the message that we find in Fannie Lou Hamer's story.
Dr. Blaine, thank you so much for talking to me today about this.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Keisha N. Blaine, author of the book, Until I Am Free, Fannie Lou Hamer's Enduring Message to America. She talked to WPR's J. Carlisle Larson earlier this month.